From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. On this Thursday, March 10th, 2016, I trust that you all are having one fantastic week, and we have a great hour in store for all of you out there. On today's show, we will talk bracketology. That's right, the days wind down, and the NCAA tourney begins in just a few days. I can't believe it. Of course, there are many conference tourneys underway as we speak. We will give you an update on the Big Ten men's basketball tournament as Michigan is on the hardwood right now, getting it on against Northwestern. We'll give you an update of that score in just a sec, but we will be inviting Deshaun Tate, men's college basketball columnist, reporter, and producer for CBS Radio 92.9 The Game in Atlanta, Georgia, as he will talk about what his field looks like as of right now and who has the most to gain and who has the most to lose in this year's Big Ten men's basketball tourney. He'll give us Cinderella's, all of that. Okay, we'll break down bracketology with Deshaun Tate. We will also answer the question, do sports hurt when stars fall? Also, the Lions have landed Marvin Jones, trying to fill the void of now Calvin Johnson, who has decided to retire. And, of course, you know on the back end of the show, we'll have Throwback Thursday for you. Be a part of today's airwaves, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But, hey, you know what's next? Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. We start with a recap of last night's high school boys basketball district semifinals action. Okemos tops Jackson 66-60. Lansing Everett beats Holt 51-48. East Lansing beats DeWitt 70-52. Grand Ledge beats Lansing Eastern 62-35. Flushing over St. John's 52-26. Leslie over Eden Rapids 68-44. Stockbridge over Jackson Lumen Christie 53-46. Lansing Catholic over Fowlerville 70-44. Williamson over Lansing Sexton 80-72. Hastings over Charlotte 56-43. Portland over Ionia 48-42. Lanesburg over Saranac 61-52. And Pawama Westphalia tops Byron 66-23. All right, girls, high school basketball action tonight, regional finals. At Mason High School, East Lansing will take on Jackson Northwest. Of course, we had head coach of the Trojans, Rob Smith, on our airwaves yesterday. And then at Midland, we have St. John's taking on Saginaw Heritage. Both of those games at 7 p.m. Also at Wayland Union, Portland will play Grand Rapids South Christian, a 6 p.m. tip there. Ithaca at Reese, 7 p.m. tip. And at Big Rapids Crossroads, you have Mount Pleasant Sacred Heart versus Portland St. Patrick's. That's at 6:30 p.m. So those are the tip times and games for high school regional finals action. Good luck to all of our local teams there. All right, Ann Arbor Skyline junior Hunter Risen has narrowed his list of college football options 4 months after taking a step back from his commitment to Michigan State. The wide receiver, who is the son of former Michigan State star wide receiver Andre Risen, he announced his updated favorites Wednesday evening via Twitter, because that's how everyone makes official statements right now. Now, the list of nine schools has no order, but does feature MSU listed at number two. Risen's other programs include Oklahoma, Alabama, Oregon, Ohio State, Texas, A&M, Miami, in Florida, California, and Penn State. In total, the junior gets this. He holds 19 right now, 19 offers, with Oklahoma being the most recent. With Calvin Johnson retiring, the Detroit Lions added the top wide receiver set to hit the free agent market, that being Marvin Jones, who will sign with the D when the new league year begins. It began yesterday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, NFL media insider Ian Rappaport reported that the five-year deal is for $40 million and includes $20 million in guarantees, $17 million of which is fully guaranteed, a source told Rappaport. Now, Jones is slated to make $27 million through the first 3 years. That's a lot of moolah. All right, the Detroit Pistons, Marcus Morris, he scored 20 points, including 2 3-pointers during a decisive fourth-quarter run. And Andre Drummond had 25 points and 17 boards to help the Pistons top the Dallas Mavericks 102-96 last night. Drummond leads the NBA with 54 double-doubles. Tobias Harris added 19 points for the D, which won its 33rd game, one more than all of last season. Detroit entered the night a half game behind Chicago for the last playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. Pistons forward Stanley Johnson, who has a sprained right shoulder, and Anthony Tolliver, who has a sprained right knee, missed their 7th and 8th consecutive games, respectively. Now, the Pistons will now visit Charlotte. I'm so used to saying Charlotte because of our local teams here, right? But they visit Charlotte on Friday night. All right, the Detroit Tigers, they beat the Washington Nationals 5-11 yesterday afternoon. The Tigers hit 5 home runs and lead all MLB teams with 18 this spring. Justin Verlander allowed 1 hit and 2 walks over 3 scoreless innings with 1 strikeout in his 2nd start of the spring. He has allowed 2 hits and 3 walks over 5 scoreless innings with 2 strikeouts in the last 2 starts. Today, the team is in Clearwater, Florida, and they will play against the Philadelphia Phillies at 1:05 p.m. Well, that first pitch has just been thrown. They are in action right now. We'll give you an update on the Detroit Tigers and the Phillies as the show proceeds. The Detroit Red Wings look to snap a 3-game losing streak as they play host to the Winnipeg Jets tonight at the Joe. Puck drop is scheduled for 7:30 p.m. The Wings are 2 points ahead of the Philadelphia Flyers for the 2nd wild card into the Stanley Cup playoffs from the Eastern Conference. And the Kansas City Chiefs were fined and stripped of 2 draft picks by the NFL for a violation of the league's anti-tampering policy for having improper contact with wide receiver Jeremy Maclin before the start of last year's free agent signing period. All right, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. It's now time to start the show. WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Thanks so much, Stevie. One of my favorite Stevie Wonder tracks there. I was made to love her. Oh, Stevie, just a genius. Musical icon, folks. Oh, boy, beautiful Thursday. I tell you what, the weather is certainly breaking outside. I think we can safely say that the snow is now long gone. Knock on wood, though. This is Michigan. You just never know. You just never know. Got to be cautious when I say things like that concerning Michigan weather. It's so unpredictable, okay? Oh, boy, we got a great hour in store for all of our listeners out there. Call in. Be a part of today's show. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. We got to give you guys an update on the Big Ten tournament. Men's college basketball. March Madness is in the air everywhere. Oh, I love this time of the year. Nothing like it. Yesterday, got to give a shout out to Illinois. They took care of Minnesota. And also Rutgers. Rutgers. In that game, they played Nebraska, and they fell to Nebraska. So Nebraska moves on to play Wisconsin at 9 o'clock tomorrow. And Illinois moves on to play Iowa at 2:30 p.m. tomorrow. Today. That's today. I'm looking at the wrong dates here. So those games will take place today. So Iowa, right after Michigan and Northwestern finish up, that tip-off was at 12 p.m. And to give you guys an update on how the Wolverines are doing. They actually have a 37-29 lead over the Wildcats. 17:40 left to play. It is the second half. And the Wolverines are looking pretty good right now. They have a, in my opinion, the Wolverines, they have so much to gain if they go deep in this year's Big Ten tournament. They are one of those bubble teams. They are on the fringe. And if they go deep, they could possibly make an argument that they deserve to be in the NCAA tourney field. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting to see how John Beilein's team, how far they go this weekend. But again, 37 to now 31, so a 6-point lead for the Wolverines over Northwestern. 17:04 left to play. Again, Michigan State will play tomorrow at 6:30, and they play the winner of tonight's Ohio State and Penn State game. And as I mentioned to start the show, we will be chatting with Deshaun Tate down in the ATL. That's right, Atlanta, Georgia. He's a men's college basketball columnist, reporter, and producer for CBS Radio. He does one outstanding job, and he's becoming a regular on the show. Gotta love Deshaun. He's doing a great job. Great job. So looking forward to chatting with him to see how his bracket looks. All right, folks, I want to start by answering this question because this is how we ended yesterday's show. It's so interesting in the world of sports how, you know, there are so many dynamics of fandom, you know? So many dynamics. There's so many layers to being a fan because, you know, I've seen certain fans rally around individuals when they are at the top of their game, rally around individuals or teams when they are at the top of their respective game. You know, a prime example, looking at the NBA right now, the Golden State Warriors. Everyone loves this team. Everyone loves this team. You know, and it's so interesting because, you know, when you have a top dog in any sport that's been dominating, just completely dominating, you can have one of two things. Either the fans fall in love with that squad or individual, or it can be quite the contrary, where the fans kind of, for the majority of the fans, look at that team or athlete as the villain, and they want to see that villain get knocked off his or her respective pedestal. So in the NBA, though, the Golden State Warriors have, you know, they're the NBA champions. They won the NBA Finals last year, and they are on the verge of making history this season. Possibly beating that NBA record 72-10 Chicago Bulls team that, of course, donned, in my opinion, the greatest basketball player of all time, Michael Jordan, in the 90s. They're going for history right now. But they're so fun to watch. They're so entertaining. They have so many personalities that are lovable, like a Steph Curry, who is a humble guy. You know, he plays the game the right way. He's so fun to watch. How can you not like Steph Curry, right? But everyone has fallen in love with the Warriors. Where, on the contrary, not too long ago, folks, if you remember down in Miami, you had the three-headed monster of LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. They held a concert saying, not one, not two, not three, not four. The concert they held talking about the amount of rings they were going to win now that the three were all together down in South Beach. And that instantly flipped a switch when it comes to the hate that fans have toward the Miami Heat. It instantly flipped a switch. It rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And everywhere the Miami Heat went, they were the villain. Whereas the Golden State Warriors, I mean, they have fans everywhere. Everywhere they go, there is going to be a big group of people that want to see this team and that have the gold and blue on. Point blank, period. It's a crazy dynamic. And the question that I have, because looking at this past weekend, I don't know how many fight fans we have out there, but this was one of the biggest stories of the sporting weekend. It had everybody talking because not only did you see one upset occur, but you saw two upsets occur. Nate Diaz, he caused Conor McGregor to submit, got him in a submission chokehold, and Conor McGregor fell, who was one of the premier faces of UFC. And then you had Holly Holm, who is just coming off such a miraculous ride. You know, becoming the first woman to beat Ronda Rousey. You know, Holly Holm getting in the ring and going after Miesha Tate. Holly Holm, certainly the favorite in that matchup. And then what happens? Miesha Tate beats Holly Holm. So you had not one, but two upsets over the fighting weekend. And, you know, I start to hear this dialogue between individuals, national pundits, as well as fight fans that I know. And, you know, this conversation, whether or not McGregor and Holm losing is healthy for UFC. And then the broadened conversation you can have is whether or not sports hurt when stars fall, when its stars lose. After being on top of the game, when they lose, does it hurt the overall product? Now, again, there's so many ways you can go with this conversation. To answer the question, my initial answer to that question is it all depends. I know, very cliche, very politically right, Al? But it really all does depend, because it depends on how beloved that athlete is. And at the same time, it also depends on whether or not that fallen athlete can get back on the horse. Because, okay, let's take golf, for example. Tiger Woods. Tiger Eldrick Woods. On the top of his golf game, and then what happened in 2008? Of course, he gets caught in infidelity, cheating on his wife, and the whole incident in his car outside, the crashes, in the golf club, in his wife's hand. I mean, it was just craziness, right? Tiger Woods has never been the same. Tiger Woods has not won a major since 2008. Now, this is a man who is arguably the most popular athlete in all the world. In all of the world. Doing things we've never seen done on a golf course. So entertaining to watch. But when Tiger Woods stopped winning, when Tiger Woods fell, the ratings fell. And it hurt the game of golf. Now, golf has, on the contrary, found a few young studs in the game that are on the rise and are taking, you know, taking the sporting world by storm, taking the world of golf by storm. Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Ricky, you know, Fowler. I mean, all of these guys are so entertaining to watch, but they will never be Tiger Woods. I just have to say that, because there was also a cultural reach that Tiger had. So in the world of golf, yeah, it hurt. It definitely hurt to see Tiger fall, and it hurt ratings. The numbers show that. And then you look at the world of boxing, on the contrary. You know, the world of boxing has certainly taken a hit, because now it's in direct competition with UFC, and UFC seems to have the upper hand right now. But let's go back to Mike Tyson, shall we? Mike Tyson, when Mike was fighting, I mean, Vegas used to shut down. I mean, I've heard stories that it was like another Super Bowl. Whenever Mike Tyson would fight, I mean, he's knocking out guys in the first round, 30 seconds into the fight, he's knocking cats out, okay? And he was such a dynamic personality as well. But, and everybody thought that Mike Tyson was unbeatable. Nobody could beat this man. Then what happens? He fights Buster Douglas. He loses. And then you started to see that Mike was human. And I got to be honest, you know, the fighting world took a bit of a hit, because Mike no longer had that lore of being just a freak of nature. He no longer had that lore of being a guy that can never be beaten anymore. And people love to watch that. And I think that's the same intrigue you have about the Warriors. I mean, they're so good. And they're chasing this record that the Bulls set in the 90s that you want to watch. You're compelled to watch. But let's say that the Warriors end up losing, you know, 12 games this year and don't break that record. It does lose a bit of that, okay, I want to tune in to see this. It loses that lure to it. And that's exactly what happened to Mike. But I'll also say this, and again, there's two aspects to it. If those athletes can get back on that horse and become dominant once again, we can see that same fanfare and that same craziness that we saw before. That's what I honestly believe. So to answer the question, do sports hurt when its stars fall? Initially, you better believe it. Yes, sports hurt. People stop tuning in like they used to. They stop watching the records being broken, because you look vulnerable right now. Simple as that. But if that respective athlete or that team can get back to some form of dominance, can rebound, because we all love comeback stories as well, hey, they can also benefit from it. Call in. What do you think? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. I also want to note that, hey, athletes are human, folks. No one's unbeatable, okay? Simple as that. Now, I know many people may bring up Floyd Mayweather, but again, you guys know how I feel about Floyd Mayweather. I believe that Floyd Mayweather, he dodged so many fighters throughout his entire career, and he made it easy, and he was smart about it. He was smart about it. He picked and chose his fights. He waited until athletes who were, you know, boxers who were in their prime who called him out, he waited a few years until they got older to fight him. So Mayweather was smart. I mean, he retires without a blemish on his record. But again, for the most part, everyone has to go down. Everyone has to lose. That's sports. That's the intrigue of sports. That's the nature of sports. And, you know, it was so funny. You know, it was so comical watching Conor McGregor and his statements and his you know, just the constant trash talking that he had, you know, about Nate Diaz before this fight. So funny. I want to play a snippet here. This was actually, now I'm just going to kind of trying to, you know, compare and contrast the two demeanors of Conor McGregor, the one before the fight and the one after, just to put in perspective that athletes are humans just like you and me, and everyone has to fall down sooner or later. Here is actually an interview that Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz did on CNBC. It was some sort of like, you know, stock program. They decided to have the two fighters on to promote the fight. And again, I think Conor McGregor, he has to go down as one of the premier trash talkers in the history of sports. Just absolutely hilarious. He's so clever. Check out the mouthpiece that Mr. Conor McGregor had on him before the fight.
Very good. How are you?
I'm going to talk about money because we are the business network and the business of the UFC and all that sort of stuff.
I'll take over from here, Nate. You can bounce. take a coffee break, Nate. And by coffee break, I mean bring me my coffee.
No. They want you to give us a quick count to 10, both of you gentlemen, if you don't mind, just if you wouldn't mind counting to 10.
Nate can only count to 5. 10. Oh. Count to 5, Nate, will you, if you can?
You can.
Who do you up with that coffee?
I ain't counting. How about
and
that?
Who do you up with that coffee?
So we're going to talk about money and business. Connor, let me ask you first. There's word that you could make $10 million on this thing. Is that accurate?
On this fight?
Yeah.
I'm going to breeze past the 10 milli mark. Breeze past it.
What are you going to make?
A hell of a lot more.
Nate, how much are you going to make?
I make a lot. A lot more than everybody else.
Yeah, a lot more than his last one, that is. He can thank me for that one. I've made more millionaires in this game than anybody else.
Nate, how much of the purse you're going to take home do you owe to Conor McGregor?
I don't know him.
Anything over 40 grand he owes me, because that was his last paycheck. I wiped my ass with that money. I tipped that money.
I was going to get it regardless, sooner or later. It was coming, with or without you.
And then the God came and blessed you with it.
Yeah, right.
Now, about that coffee.
Yeah. Conor McGregor, again, he's a master at trash talking. I mean, he had so many great quotes before this fight. Probably my favorite, because, you know, Conor McGregor, he had to go into a different weight class in order to fight Nate Diaz on such short notice. And, you know, they asked him about, you know, his checks, basically, the amount of money he was going to win for this fight. Not in this interview, but in another interview. And Conor McGregor said, you know what? The only weight I care about is the weight of my checks. And all of my checks are super heavyweight because that's the weight class that they fought in. Absolutely love that. Just brilliant. He's a brilliant trash talker. But after... And you heard in that piece, you know, Nate Diaz not really saying much. He just wants to get to the fight. You know, Nate Diaz, I mean, he was just kind of responding, you know, off the top of the dome as to whatever Conor McGregor would say, whatever would fly out of his mouth. But again, Nate Diaz, he gets Conor to submit in the second round, and everyone's absolutely stunned. And Conor McGregor singing an entirely different tune. Check him out here.
Can you describe the emotions after a loss like that?
You know, it stings. It stings real bad, but this is the fight business. I've been on the end of many defeats in my life, and I've rose back, so I will not shy away from it. I will not make excuses for it. I will assess it and come back.
I know it's still very fresh, but in hindsight, you feel like you almost bit off more than you can chew here.
I just misinterpreted his efficiency. He was very efficient, and he took shots well, and he played with his energy well, and whereas I didn't. I blew out, he did not. He almost felt I hurt him many times in the fight. I abandoned the body shots. The body shots were doing damage, but he cut me one or two jabs to the body, and I avoided his body then after that. But he played well. He went into autopilot mode where I panicked a little bit. And this is it. You win or you learn. So,
does this result mean that you're done fighting at 170?
Yeah, definitely not. No, I take any fights. When the history books are written, I show up. I had many, many opportunities to walk from this fight. Even after Nate got brought in, you know, so I show up to fight. If there's 170, you know, I enjoyed the test. I feel a little bit more practice. I could be aware. You know, most, if I was fighting a man my own weight, 155 or 145, they're going to be KO'd from them shots, you know, so I feel a little bit of an adjustment of knowing that the opponent will be able to take more of it. And then I could continue to compete at that weight, no problem. If there's a fight there, ring me up, I'll answer the bell, no problem.
Yes, Conor McGregor singing an entirely different tune, ladies and gents, after the fight. Reality setting in that he lost to Nate Diaz again, submission, second round, rear naked chokehold. And as you heard, I mean, you know, Conor was trying to do something that he'd never done in his career. I mean, go up to 170, fight Walter Wade against Nate Diaz, a bigger guy, and you can kind of see the size differential when those two are in the ring. But again, you know, hey, athletes are human. They're going to lose. How you respond to that loss is the key, though. So is the UFC going to hurt now that two of its biggest stars fell on the same night? You better believe it. It loses that attention. It loses that draw that a lot of fans wanted to see. You know, a lot of fans wanted to see Conor McGregor stay on that mountaintop, prove that he could do seemingly the impossible, moving up to the 170 weight class in such short a time and succeed. People wanted to see that. And now that he's lost, I mean, you know, McGregor's a lot more, he's a more entertaining guy than Nate Diaz is. So UFC is certainly going to hurt. But now the real question is whether or not Conor McGregor can rebound. And it's said that he wants a rematch with Nate Diaz. Interesting dynamic, though. That's the sports world. That is the sports world. It varies depending on the athlete, and it varies depending on the team. Call in, folks, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll be talking men's college basketball. That's right, bracketology with Deshaun Tate, men's college hoop columnist, reporter, and producer for CBS Radio in Atlanta, Georgia. Don't miss that and so much more. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports.
Getting the numbers straight.
A brand new Fox 2 Mitchell poll shows that Bernie Sanders needs to pull off a miracle to win in tomorrow's primary. The numbers show that Clinton is topping Sanders by a nearly 2-1 margin.
Hillary Clinton was definitely going to take Michigan until she didn't. Why the polls sometimes get it wrong? That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
The Takeaway, today at 3 on AM 870 WKAR.
You listen to Current State because you want to be informed about the world around you. That's why we bring you thoughtful conversations on topics that matter, like early childhood education.
We know that lack of quality preschool education is one of the biggest indicators to underperformance for low-income students.
I'm Current State producer April Van Buren. Tune in for your daily dose of information and entertainment weekdays at 9 and 6 on 90.5 WKAR.
Whoa. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. And I want to give you guys an update on the Big Ten tournament right now. Michigan taking on Northwestern. The score is 49-42. The Wolverines are on top, and we have, 9:04 left in that game. So 49-42, just about 9 minutes left to play. And looking at the scoring leaders for the Wolverines, you have Muhammad Ali Abdur-Rahman. Love that name. 14 points for him. Zach Irvin has chipped in 7. Duncan Robinson, 14 for him. So Abdur-Rahman and Robinson have really shouldered the load offensively for the Wolverines tonight. And you get Ricky Doyle with 6 off the bench to lead the way for the guys coming out for help. So 49-45 now, 8:27. This is a pretty close game. Now you got to be chopping on those fingernails if you're the Wolverines right now. But we'll see. Again, we'll keep you updated as that game goes along. I also want to give a shout out to the Detroit Pistons, folks. The Pistons, they topped the Dallas Mavericks last night on the road. Big win for the Pistons because right now they are certainly in the hunt for that, you know, it's the last few spots in the Eastern Conference playoff picture. And they top the Mavs. You get, you know, Marcus Morris scoring 20 points, including 2 3-pointers during a decisive fourth quarter run. Andre Drummond, a routine double-double for him. 25 points, 17 boards. The Pistons beating the Mavs 102-96. And how about Reggie Jackson? Reggie Jackson didn't have a great night last night. But there was a moment when the Mavs were trying to make a comeback, shot clock running down. Reggie Jackson, he was about 7 feet from the three-point line, just throws up a prayer, nothing but the bottom of the net. Gave the Pistons some cushion and gave them a big momentum builder that moment. And the Pistons go on to win that game. And it's going to be very interesting, though, because, again, they're on this road trip. They take on Charlotte on Friday night. Definitely a dangerous team. Michael Jordan's team is definitely dangerous on any given night. But what fascinates me about this Pistons team from top to bottom is that they get production from so many guys. I mean, Reggie Jackson is a guy who, statistically, when you look at the last 3 minutes of a game, right now Reggie Jackson is leading the NBA in made field goals in under 3 minutes in the fourth quarter. Crazy, right? Reggie Jackson just clutch. That's the definition of clutch. The numbers show it. Marcus Morris, a savvy forward who has come from Phoenix with something to prove. He was great last night. He can hit the three ball. He's got great post presence. You know, he can take you off the dribble. He's just a good player. I mean, Marcus Morris is just a solid player. And how about Steve Blake, who's like the vet on the team? Steve Blake came out last night, hit some big buckets for the Pistons to extend the lead against the Mavs last night. He was huge as well. You know, and again, they're doing this without Stanley Johnson. Again, a sprained right shoulder for him. Without Anthony Tolliver, sprained right knee for him. Again, they missed their, 7th and 8th games, respectively. So they're doing it without, you know, 2 big components. Aaron Baines has come out of nowhere and played great basketball. Tobias Harris, 19 points for him last night. And what's so impressive about Tobias is that Tobias is a scorer. We all know that. We all knew what Tobias could bring to this team offensively when it comes to his scoring. He can put the ball in the bucket. But what's really impressed me is that Tobias Harris has great vision. He's a great passer. And you saw that multiple times last night. Whenever the Mavs would collapse on Tobias Harris down low, he did a great job of finding on the opposite side Andre Drummond for some easy bunny. So I love this Pistons team again. They continue this road trip and will visit Charlotte on Friday night. All right, let's talk NCAA college basketball. His name is Deshaun Tate. He is an NCAA men's college basketball columnist, reporter, and producer for CBS Radio 92.9 The Game in the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. Deshaun, how you doing, my friend?
Man, listening to you, Al, give a quick rundown about the Detroit Pistons. You're starting to make me almost be too tempted to move back home all over again.
I'm telling you, they look good right now, Deshaun. They look really good. Yeah, they seem to be clicking right now.
They do. They do. I'm just hoping that they can, you know, kind of keep it up and guard play and hopefully, you know, get Jody Meeks back around and get him doing some phenomenal things and KCP. I love what the Pistons are doing right now.
And you know what, Deshaun, I've always said this about this Pistons team. It starts on the defensive end. Simple as that. The Pistons can certainly score, but I just feel as though...
Exactly.
I mean, defense wins championships, right? But when the Pistons are locked in defensively, they can beat anybody in the league. Heck, they're one of, what, six teams now that have knocked off the Golden State Warriors, so I think that speaks volumes as well. All right, let's talk some NCAA college basketball now. I want to talk about the Big Ten men's basketball tourney right now, Deshaun, because we have Michigan in play right now. 52-49 now against Northwestern. 7:08 left to play in the second half. Yesterday, we saw Illinois top Minnesota. They will take on Iowa after the Michigan and Northwestern game. And we saw Nebraska move on. They top Rutgers to play Wisconsin today around 9 p.m. or so. I just want to get your thoughts briefly, Deshaun, on who has the most to gain and who has the most to lose in this year's Big Ten men's basketball tournament.
Well, to gain, you know, I think to gain, Iowa has a lot to gain just for the simple fact that at one point we weren't sure if they did, and then they dropped off quite a bit, and it has a lot of people really kind of questioning, was Iowa for real or were they not? Now they're in a place where they have the opportunity to prove to everybody if they can go out and hopefully win the conference tournament by saying, hey, we are that team that is for real, and another one of those teams that just cannot afford any more unfortunate losses is Maryland. And Maryland, and I know where you're at in East Lansing, trust me, that's home, so I'm sure I'm going to hear it when I get home. But I think Maryland's going to eventually come away with this thing in the conference tournament. I mean, they're really one of the better sleepers even entering the NCAA tournament. They were preseason ranked, some people's opinion, the number one team in the country, maybe top, definitely top three, you know, teams in the country, and I don't really see them losing too much outside of, you know, being outcoached. And I think that's the only way that they take a lot of those L's, unfortunately, Minnesota being one of them within the conference, one out of two. But and Tom Izzo doesn't necessarily play. A lot of people are going to feel like maybe if Michigan State doesn't necessarily win the conference tournament, there will be even bigger questions, especially with the number one seed on the line and high stakes in its own. But if I'm not mistaken, out of seven of Tom Izzo's final fours, I want to say only two of those he's come away with conference tournament championships. So it just goes to show sometimes you can't really put way too much emphasis on the conference tournament.
Yeah, and Tom is going on the record to say that, hey, we have bigger fish to fry. We're gunning for a national championship. And to go back to the point you made about Maryland this year, Deshaun, again, you mentioned a few of the losses they had, you know, again, Minnesota. They lost to Michigan in January, of course, lost to Michigan State, Wisconsin. But this is a team that has so much talent, Deshaun. Why do we see such a roller coaster ride this year from Maryland, a Maryland squad that, again, a lot of people were choosing to be a national championship contender? Still not too, you know, that's not too far-fetched to say because they have the talent on paper to do it. But why did we see that inconsistency for the Terps?
Well, like I said before, I think one of the biggest things was coaching, and they have the talent, they have the depth, they have experience, especially, you know, when you're one of the reasons when you're thinking about teams that have to be consistent, let alone long runs in the month of March and going into April. We're just talking about conference play where people are starting to figure out Maryland isn't one of those teams anymore that just so happens that's going to take you by surprise in the Big Ten. They had an extremely good season last year, but as you know, that second year around, teams are going to start making adjustments to how you play, your whole system, how you run your offense, how you set up your defense and schemes, the whole nine. And I love Melo Trumbull. I personally think call Tyler Ulis or whoever, whatever you want, but I really believe that Melo Trumbull, hands down, believe it or not, is the best point guard in the country. But when you're talking about making those deep runs, you're going to need someone to go with, to be with that guard, and that's going to have to be a big. Now, Diamond Stone, everybody knows, is an awesome, phenomenal, phenomenal player, but you're still going to see some of those freshman mistakes. Hopefully, they don't come in the crunch time, but out of the losses they've taken, that's when they've been.
Now, I got to ask Deshaun, Melo Trimble had a great year last year, a great year. And I really believe that if he came out last year, I mean, hey, he could be balling out in the NBA right now and possibly could have been a high draft pick. And we heard that same talk, him entering this season. But Melo has been up and down this year. Do you think that Melo has hurt his draft stock at all?
I don't think he has. If he has, I don't think it's been overly too much. I'm going to tell you one guy that Melo reminds me of, and maybe he's not as consistent as this guy, but just as far as his style of play, he reminds me a lot of Trey Burke at Michigan, mm-hmm. a guy that can get the ball to, you know, his teammates in positions where they can do the most with it. He knows the strengths and the weaknesses of everybody on the floor. He has a high IQ. He can penetrate and shoot the basketball. On top of all of that, not just from a scoring standpoint, but on top of that, he does it so it's kind of a, like a quiet killer, like a silent killer. By the time you look up, he's got 25 or 30 points. So teams are going to make their adjustments. But I think that Maryland is preparing themselves and in a good situation to, you know, go on a long stretch of a run for the month of March and into the NCAA tournament. They have a chance to show that in the Big Ten Conference tournament, and I think that's where his stock will bump back up on that long run.
Yeah, Melo Trimble now a sophomore. Of course, he was a freshie last year. He's averaging 2 points less per game than he did during his freshman season. Shooting, not a big disparity here, but his freshman year, he shot 44% from the floor. This year, 42% from the floor. And from the three-point line, he was shooting 41% from the three-point line last year and now 33%. Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with DeShawn Tate, men's college basketball columnist, reporter, and producer for CBS Radio down in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, DeShawn, is there any advantage for the winner that comes out in the Big Ten championship game this Sunday, seeing as though that championship game takes place just hours before the selection committee picks the entire field for the NCAA tourney? Is there any advantage for the winner? Do you think the committee is really looking at that game hours before they select their field?
I think so, especially depending on who that team is. But I definitely think that there is an advantage. I mean, Michigan State has an opportunity to be a number one seed yet again. And, of course, that's a big deal. I know everybody wants them to be, you know, more of the team that's more concerned winning a national championship and deservingly so. But that can do some really big things for a team like Michigan State to cut down the nets. They're in Indianapolis. And, of course, for Maryland, who just entered the conference, that could be really big for them as well. It's been a while since Iowa has won. So I do think that the committee will take a lot of those things into consideration. Another team being Indiana. I mean, hey, around this time last year, about 365 days ago, we were talking about Coach Cream maybe being put in a position where he's going to have to clean out his office. Now he wins the regular season conference championship, has an opportunity to win the conference tournament championship right in his own backyard. Who knows how far that can really bump them up going into the NCAA tournament. So, sure, I think there's a lot to gain, and I think the committee will definitely take a look.
Yeah, congrats to Tom Crean. He's also named the Big Ten Coach of the Year as well. And again, you know, going back to that point, DeShawn, because, you know, we talked to Tom Izzo earlier this week, and he mentioned how he hates how as soon as the conference tourney champion is crowned on that Sunday, like literally hours, you don't have much time to celebrate it because literally hours after that, sometimes less than an hour after that, you have to shift your mindset to now the NCAA tourney because then you find out who you play and the location where you'll be at in that first round. What do you think is the biggest challenge for the committee this year, DeShawn?
I think the biggest challenge will be probably those mid-major teams that, you know, people say may not deserve to be in, that may have a chance. Monmouth has an opportunity to get in and not win their conference tournament championship game. That might, you know, kind of raise some questions or raise some eyebrows to some other teams who feel like they should be in instead, which in that case, on Selection Sunday, we might be looking at Monmouth being in and Wichita State being out only because of Syracuse losing in the winding moments of the game to Pittsburgh. And that gives them their 13th loss, you know, within. So I think that those are the biggest things that we have to really look forward to is why do we see these mid-major teams being left out and putting in some of these, you know, Power 6, Power 5, Power 6 conference teams instead, when everybody wants to see, you know, those mid-major teams. And the mid-major teams have definitely this year, done every bit and more exceptional work putting forth to show them why they deserve to be a part of the NCAA tournament.
Deshaun, I got to ask, as of right now, who are your number one seeds if you had to pick them?
Number one seeds I'm going to go with, obviously, I don't think there's really anything Kansas can do to really not win and get the number one seed overall. I think they'll get it. I really believe that the winner of the Big East, assuming it comes down to Villanova or Xavier, one of them will get in. I think North Carolina is going to go ahead and take care of business and move forward and get ready for a nice deep run. As well, I think Carolina will get the other one. And just like football, this might sound familiar to those Spartans up there. I think the way things are going to shake out, it's going to really be between Michigan State and Oklahoma as to who gets in. And I say Oklahoma, even though they're a little further back in the rankings, because Oklahoma being a team that if Kansas loses early, Oklahoma goes far. And especially if they win their conference tournament, then I can see them getting a one seed, especially if Michigan State doesn't. So I think that'll be the biggest thing to look out for with those number one seeds being announced on Sunday is between Michigan State and Oklahoma and how they fare in the conference tournament after.
Okay, now, Deshaun, with those number one seeds, you know, being said, I gotta ask, I mean, out of those, who has the biggest chance of possibly falling early? Because a lot of people believe, again, it's never happened before, but do you think this is the year that we finally see a number one seed go out in the first round of the tourney? And if so, which team do you think will be that fluke?
Well, I can't say that I really believe that this will be the year. I can say that I hope that this is the year. I can also say that every single year, Al, we're drawing closer and closer and closer to a number one seed being dropped by a 16 in the tournament. And this is one of the strongest years, believe it or not, for some of those 16 seeds that are going to receive. And I think if it's going to be one, it's going to be the winner of the Big East, assuming those out of those teams that I mentioned. If Oklahoma is a one seed, there's a very good chance, but because Xavier and Villanova aren't really heavy in the front court, they rely on those guards, and a lot of those mid-majors, they're really guard heavy too. They don't really have too much, you know, depth in the front court themselves. So the styles are a little bit more similar. I think that will be Xavier or Villanova if one of those get the number one seed.
Deshaun, who are your Cinderellas?
I like Monmouth if Monmouth can get in. You know, I really do like Monmouth as one of those teams. Another team is Chattanooga. And believe it or not, Al, the last time Chattanooga made to the NCAA tournament, got out of the first round, was back in 1997 when they beat, on the way to the Sweet 16, they beat Illinois and Georgia in the first and second round to get to the Sweet 16. This year, Al, they beat Georgia and Illinois, respectively, on their home floors during the regular season. Chattanooga is really a team that people want to watch out for. Right now, I'd probably say Monmouth, Chattanooga, and last but not least, whoever that team. There's some really, really sneaky teams in the Atlantic 10 you have to watch out for. There's VCU. That's probably one of the best conference tournaments to watch for. There's VCU. There's Dayton. Rhode Island can be sneaky. St. Bonaventure and St. Joe's, you know. So I think one of those can honestly be a sleeper for Cinderella coming up on the NCAA tournament.
And you know what? I was watching SportsCenter last night. Scott Van Pelt, he sat down with bracketology expert, quote-unquote, for ESPN, Joe Lunardi. And Joe actually had Wichita State, the Shockers, making it to the tourney. And then, you know, there was this big debate going on because it seems like Joe Lunardi is on a bit of an island when making this argument for Wichita State, seeing as though I look at Wichita State's resume and say, okay, who have they played? You know what I mean? Do you think Wichita State may shock everybody and make the tournament this year?
It's tough. I'm not sure. I know that's kind of one of those, no pun intended, with the shock
right,
deal. But
right, you caught that?
I got you on that. We're on the same page for sure. I think that they can get in. I don't think it'll be a shocker if they got in because at the end of the day, they are Wichita State. And what I mean by that is that they do have some success, obviously, in the NCAA tournament. And on top of that, recent success by going to the Final Four a couple years ago here in Atlanta in 2013 and have won a crazy amount of games from then until now. So from that standpoint, can I see them getting in? Yeah, but the reason why it's so difficult is you're going to have to really balance out and weigh and see how good was this team when they were without one of their best players, which is a senior in Fred VanVleet, who is the other piece to that dynamic duo with Ron Baker in the backcourt. So it does speak volume, and it does say quite a bit about that team and what they've been able to accomplish with him. But you certainly got to look at what they've been able to do without him. And they started out the season, I want to say maybe 1-4, 1-5, which is not very good, especially for Wichita State trying to make a name for themselves.
DeShaun Tate of CBS Radio out in Atlanta, Georgia. Quick update again, Michigan, they are taking on Northwestern in the Big Ten tournament as we speak. And guess what, folks? Michigan has just given up the lead. It is 55-54 with 2:44 left to play in the game. How surprising is that, DeShaun?
That's always good news up there, isn't it, Al?
I don't want to say, I try to say non-biased, but I'm just saying.
Well, you know, I'm supposed to be a neutral guy. I'm not supposed to be biased. I'm obviously a Spartan guy, but at the end of the day, I think that Michigan was a team. You know, when it comes to the Big Ten, there was no clear-cut favorite on who's really going to absolutely come away and with the conference tournament, and I think that's one of the best things about it. Michigan was one of those teams that I thought, even though they couldn't necessarily win the conference tournament, I thought that they could possibly go to the conference finals of the Big Ten tournament. And so, I mean, it's a little bit of a surprise, but it's not really a surprise. It's March, and everybody's bringing their best. Northwestern, who hasn't never been to the NCAA tournament, has a shot. People forget about that all the time. So it's going to be intriguing for sure to find out how the rest of the game goes.
All right, DeShaun, one more for you. We all know how good this Michigan State men's basketball team is from top to bottom. They can go so deep. They have a National Player of the Year candidate in Denzel Valentine, Bryn Forbes, arguably the best shooter in the entire country, Matt Costello, Gavin Schilling, Marvin Clark Jr. They're just so deep. If there is any chink in the armor for this team that will prevent the Spartans from going far in the tournament, what must they improve on?
Michigan State has to improve on, really, I think probably the biggest elephant in the room is just being healthy and staying healthy. Michigan State also has, you know, their own little ways from time to time of turning the ball over, and it happens that at its most point in the NCAA tournament when it comes to a loss, it's always against a team that brings, you know, that pressure, a whole lot of energy, transition, and gets a lot of points off of turnovers. It always happens to be a Duke or a North Carolina for some reason. So as long as they don't, I don't want to say as long as they don't run into those, because I personally hope that they do run into a Duke or North Carolina just to kind of show that it's not a fluke. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, they just really have to stay healthy, continue rebounding the glass, doing an exceptional job that they used to do, not turning the ball over, of course, and make sure they knock down their free throws.
DeShaun Tate, men's college basketball columnist, producer, and reporter for CBS Radio 92.9 The Game in Atlanta, Georgia. DeShaun, how can people read and listen to your work?
Oh, check me out on the station website, 929thegame.com. I'm also located on Twitter. You can catch me there. Follow. I usually try and promise that I can follow back. That's at Tate's Take Sports, TATESTAKE Sports on Twitter.
DeShaun, thanks so much for your time. Enjoy the madness, all right?
Thank you. You know, I most certainly will.
All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will put a bow on this Thursday edition of WKAR's Current Sports by hitting you with, of course, Throwback Thursday. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to Current Sports.
From local issues.
If Lansing Township doesn't pay, the county is on the hook.
To national impact.
I never went into the show thinking that I would win the show. The thing that what was always on my mind was kind of maintaining integrity and doing what I do.
WKAR's Current State focuses on Michigan. Current State daily on 90.5 FM, AM 870, always at WKAR.org.
Hi, I'm Armin Alney. On the next To the Point, the nations of Europe are close to a deal to ship tens of thousands of unwanted migrants from Greece to Turkey, but a German legislator is among those calling it both illegal and immoral.
This goes to all heads of state and government. I wonder, how can you sleep at night?
We'll hear how the ongoing humanitarian crisis is dividing the European Union. Next time on To the Point from Public Radio International.
AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Folks, we've officially got a barn burner. Oh my goodness. It is the second half, 17 seconds left to play. Don't turn away from Current Sports, though, all right? 17 seconds left. Michigan has a one-point lead, 59-58 over Northwestern. Good googly moogly. You got to be kidding me. 17 seconds left. 59-58. The Wolverines are on top, leading the Northwestern Wildcats in the Big Ten men's basketball tournament. All right. As I keep you abreast of what happens in this next 17 seconds of this game, we love to wrap up each and every Thursday edition of WKAR's Current Sports with a segment that we dub Throwback Thursday, where we look at what exactly happened on this particular day in sports history. Here we go.
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman back over his step. Into the slot for Brown. Shoots. Yes. And there it goes. You never know when to expect it. Darren McCarty said before.
All right, folks, today is Thursday, March 10th. So what took place in sports history on this day in sports? Well, not much. Not much. I have five events here to throw at you. In 1920, Joe Maloney of the Quebec Bulldogs, he scored six goals in a game against the Ottawa Senators. In 1941, the Brooklyn Dodgers announced that their players would begin wearing batting helmets during the 1941 season. I'm sure that had to do with safety. With a 90-mile-per-hour fastball coming at you, you don't want to put your head at danger, all right? So thank goodness that change happened. That happened in 1941. Just protective helmets for baseball players while they are at the plate. In 1993, Sherry Davis became the first woman to be the PA voice of a major league team. How cool is that, right? She was the public address announcer for the San Francisco Giants. And we actually had a big voice in the world of minor league baseball on the show not too long ago. I don't know if you guys remember Jennifer. Her last name escapes me, though. Jennifer was on the show a while ago, and she became one of the first female announcers in minor league baseball. Jennifer Swanchera. That name just came to my mind. But Jennifer Swanchera, she's one of the very first woman voices in the world of minor league baseball. And she is, of course, was the PA announcer for the Lansing Lugnuts. So we got to get Jennifer back on the show. All right, 2002, ESPN aired A Season on the Brink. It was the first original motion picture by ESPN. The movie was about Bobby Knight. And in 2004, final event here, Todd Bertuzzi of the Vancouver Canucks held a press conference to apologize for hitting Steve Moore of the Colorado Avalanche in the side of the head from behind and driving his head into the ice in a game on March 8th. Moore landed face first with Bertuzzi on top of him. Moore suffered a broken neck, a concussion, and deep cuts on his face. On March 11th of 2004, the NHL suspended Bertuzzi for the remainder of the regular season in the playoffs and announced that his eligibility would be assessed the following season and would take into account Moore's health and the progression of his recovery. That was one ugly moment in the world of sports. I definitely remember that one. All right, folks. Still looking for an update here. I'm going to hit refresh here to see if I can get an update on this game for you guys. And it's still saying 17 seconds, so I'm pretty sure there's a timeout taking place right now. But again, the Michigan Wolverines are in a barn burner against the Northwestern Wildcats. Second half, 17 seconds left. Michigan, they have a one-point lead. My goodness, I wish I was watching that one live, all right? Well, I guess I'll get a chance to right now. With less than a minute left, we have to bid you all adieu, folks. We'll be back at it on tomorrow's show. Much thanks goes to Deshaun Tate of CBS Radio, 92.9 The Game down in Atlanta, Georgia. Also, my man, Drew Hill, the man behind the glass, filling in, of course, for Isaac Constance. We'll be back at it tomorrow, same time, same place. You have been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care, have a great afternoon, and be easy, people.